This is Primal Potential, and I am your host, Elizabeth Benton. Primal Potential is about you. Your ability to change is not defined by yesterday and doesn't need to wait until tomorrow. Your transformation is now. Let's get started. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal Potential podcast. I am Elizabeth Benton. Today, we have a special guest on the show, and I recorded this episode probably about a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago, and I wanted to release it right away, but such is the life of a podcaster. We held off for a little bit. It is so appropriate. It is so, so timely. Today on the show, we have John Assaraf, and he is an author of several books, but most recently, he wrote a book called Inner Size, The New Science to Unlock Your Brain's Hidden Power. I don't know about you, but that sounds really good, unlocking my brain's hidden power. What he explains so well is that our brain is a powerful, powerful, powerful machine, and we are not using it to its fullest potential, but we can. It's not some magic. It is a practice, and there are specific things that we can do to practice making our brains better. So John is not just an author, as if we can even say that. John's actually built 5 different multi-million dollar companies. He has multiple New York Times best-selling books, one of which is the most recent one that we talk about a lot today. But I want you to really dive into this episode because he goes through the how, right? Not the fact that we can. I think most of us know we could use our brains more powerfully, but the how. What does the practice look like? What are the things we need to do? What do we do when we feel like we're not even present? Like we don't think about our choices until after we've made them. It is such a powerful conversation. I'm so grateful to John for his time. Now, I will say this, and I want to make sure everybody says it. I should probably say it 3 times because I know I'll get emails. People won't hear me say this. The audio on my end is a little funky sometimes. John's is fine. There are no issues with John's, but sometimes when you hear me come in with a question, there's like a little bit of a reverb. I tried to get rid of it. I couldn't. I didn't want to miss airing this episode just because of some weird audio issues, so I apologize, but please know that the real gold in this episode comes from what John says, and that audio is totally fine. It's not major. I don't want you to think like it's going to be all garbled. It's not. There's just a little bit of an echo most of the time when I'm speaking, but it's an opportunity to practice overlooking that because what John has to share is really important. So again, the audio on this one is not as stellar as I would like it to be. There's something going on my end, but really this episode is about all the amazing things that John has to share. So without further ado, please enjoy this powerful conversation with John Assaraf. Welcome to the Primal Potential podcast, John Assaraf. Thank you so much for being here.
It's so great to be with you, Elizabeth. Thank you for having me.
I will say that you have got some major job security in times like these, don't you?
You know, it's interesting. I was telling my wife last night at dinner, I said, sweetheart, do you realize I haven't worked this many hours in probably about 20 years? And she goes, yeah, I know. She says, it's just crazy. I guess when you're in the midst of a real, paradigm shift and real threats, mental and emotional awareness and control is really one of the few things that you can do for yourself.
Yeah.
And we're just all on this just incredible ride right now of uncertainty and doubt and it's challenging for a lot of people who don't know what to do. So hopefully we'll give them some things to be able to do to feel better.
Yeah, you just hit on 2 critical things right there. Number one, the word threat. Like a lot of people are really feeling threatened by this.
And yes, and it's perfectly normal. You know, if you step back for just a moment and forget that, you know, humans have faces and beautiful eyes and nice noses and lips. And you go, what's behind that? Well, you obviously have a brain and a nervous system, right? So before, you know, we had the attributes of being, you know, Homo sapien, we've got this brain and nervous system that is functioning based on a hierarchy that goes like this. Any incoming information or any information that's swirling around in your own thought processes that involves survival is going to raise this high alert. Any threat, real or imagined, activates this nervous system like nothing else because we want to survive. Right below that, the second hierarchy of how our brains work is avoidance of pain or discomfort. And our brain doesn't care whether it's financial pain or discomfort, mental pain or discomfort, physical pain or discomfort, emotional pain or discomfort. Anything that potentially can cause this danger for our lives or discomfort, our brain's cortisol levels go, or our brain releases cortisol and epinephrine and norepinephrine, the stress hormones that cause us to feel anxiety and cause us to not feel great. And when we have a real threat like coronavirus that could not only invade our homes and our businesses and our lives, but can kill us, the threat is real. And then we have our television stations talking about it all day long, and radio and internet and LinkedIn and YouTube and Facebook and Twitter. Everybody is talking about it. It exacerbates that threat response that very few of us have ever had at the levels we are having right now.
The other thing that you empower us with is when you said mental and emotional control, we have the ability to build those as skills, as muscles.
Bingo.
And I think a lot of people right now, they feel powerless because they can't control coronavirus, right? And they can't control maybe whether or not they have a job next week or if they have a job right now.
Right.
And a lot of people doubt this idea that they can develop mental and emotional control. Like, it kind of seems like a fairyland, like in theory, sure, but how do we do that? And that's one of the things that I'm excited to dive into with you, is not only do you give us this hope that mental and emotional control is something that we can control and we can build and improve, but you not only have a strategy and approach, you wrote an entire book about it that you call Inner Size, which, by the way, is just like so genius, because we've all heard about exercise and working on our external bodies, but this idea of inner size, working that internal mental and emotional control. But it begs the question that I know everybody's just like dying for me to get to. How do we do this? How do we develop, especially in a time of fear and uncertainty, and as you said, threat, how do we do it? Where do we start?
Great question. So let's, since you mentioned the word exercise and the book is all about inner size, we think, you know, exercise to strengthen our bodies, muscles and organs, tissues, ligaments, etc. And we know that, you know, if we went for a walk or did some weights or did a jazzercise class or Pilates or hiked or Peloton, whatever it is, with a little bit of practice, we strengthen the organs and our muscles. Well, why not consider that our brain has got neuromuscles? So what if, let's say, self-confidence was a neuromuscle? What if focus was a neuromuscle? What if your beliefs were neuromuscles? What if your habits were neuromuscles? And some were strong and some were weak and some were constructive and others were destructive. Some empowered you and some didn't. That is the first framework that we need to understand. So let me go back to exercise for just a minute and let me ask every single person who's going to listen to us this question. Let's say we decided that we wanted to jog or slowly walk a marathon. And I said to you, can you do that right now? Most people go like, certainly can't jog a marathon. Maybe if I walked slowly enough, I could walk. I'm sorry, I couldn't jog a marathon, but if I walked slowly enough, I could walk 26.2 miles.
Right.
Let's say we made a decision that a year from now, we all were going to slowly jog a marathon. And if we made the commitment right now and we learned what to eat, how much to sleep, how much water we needed, how much protein we needed, what kind of exercise and stretching to do, and we had a coach to help us or two, could we, if we started with maybe a 10-minute walk today, could we maybe get it to a 10-minute run in 3 weeks or 4 weeks, and maybe a 30-minute run in 6 or 8 weeks, and maybe an hour run in 12 weeks? Well, for most people, they can see that if you started off with a little bit now, you could strengthen your cardiovascular system and your muscles so that there's a likelihood with the right training, we could be walking or jogging a little marathon in a year from now. So when we talk about mental and emotional control, the first thing to understand is that our brain, as I mentioned before, has been evolving for 2.5 million years, and it has different parts to it. So almost like an orchestra, if you were the leader of an orchestra and you wanted a little bit more or a little bit less piano, you'd be able to get the piano player to play a little bit louder, a little bit gentler. Same with the strings or, you know, trombone for that matter. Well, there's different parts of our brain. So the first part of the brain that I like to share with people is there's part of your nervous system is there's really two parts to your nervous system you need to be aware of. One's called the sympathetic nervous system, or what I like to call is the Frankenstein part of your brain. And then you've got another part of your brain called the parasympathetic nervous system. That's the Einstein part of your brain. So what's Frankenstein doing? All day long, 24/7, Frankenstein is searching your environment to see if there's anything that could kill you or anything that could cause you real or imagined pain or discomfort. And if there's anything that even remotely comes close to that, just like a deer in the forest, you know, has her ears up for any noise that might be a predator, Frankenstein's on high alert 24/7 for your entire life. And if anything triggers Frankenstein, Frankenstein releases these neurochemicals. This happens in billions of seconds. You know, cortisol, epinephrine. Let's get a little bit of extra juice in case you got to run away or fight that tiger, you know, or to freeze and be quiet and still for safety or survival. So that's Frankenstein. Frankenstein's working all the time. It's one of the most highly developed parts of our brains, part of our instinctual brain that for 2.5 million years, it has been evolving. And while all that is happening, there's another part of our brain called the sympathetic nervous system. By the way, when the Frankenstein part of the brain is active, then we feel stress, anxiety, self-doubt, you know, negative self-talk, disempowering thought patterns around what if, you know, I fail? What if I'm embarrassed? What if I'm ashamed? What if I'm ridiculed? What if I'm judged? Frankenstein's always thinking about if I do this, if I try this, if I want this, if I try this and I fail, if I try this and I disappoint myself because I've tried it 10 other times, I don't want to disappoint myself again. Frankenstein just says, you know, just put on the brakes and don't do it. Just stay in your comfort zone and forget about that goal. And again, this is just happening like at blistering lightning speeds beneath your level of awareness. If you think of your brain as a biocomputer, like when you type into your computer, you know, all of the hardware and the software and the operating systems working cohesively in millions of operations per second. Well, your brain is in billions of operations per second. So the reason I like to start off with that is when somebody's feeling out of control, when somebody is feeling stressed, when somebody's feeling like there's so much potential danger out there, they are gonna keep perpetuating Frankenstein running the show. And Frankenstein is the equivalent of you driving your car and a light pops up on the dash to give you a signal that something may be worth paying attention to. So you don't take a hammer and hit that signal on your dash. You look at it and you go, oh, There's a little bit, I'm a little bit low on windshield wiper fluid, or the back left tire is missing a little bit of air, or the hood is open, or the trunk is open. So your fear center or stress center is this Frankenstein center that is a early warning detection mechanism that should be treated as one of your very, very, very best friends. Frankenstein operates at the beneath your level of awareness until the signals are all sent to you in the forms of thoughts and feelings. So on the very other side of this is the parasympathetic, the calm and respond part of your system, which activates what I call as the Einstein brain. Mm-hmm. And when Einstein is active, he, or if there's a female Einstein, she Einstein, is thinking about, well, what can I do about this? Is this real threat or is it imagined? Is there anybody that knows how to navigate through this? And Frankenstein uses his imagination to see his way to the result, to the goal, to the vision, to the health, to the finances, to the relationship that he wants to have. He's always looking for possibilities of how he can, while Frankenstein's always coming up with reasons why it may not work. Now, when you learned to drive your car, you needed to learn how to use the gas and the brakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, most people have never learned how to use the Einstein and the Frankenstein part of their brain, let alone accept that both are a part of their genius.
Hmm.
So there's a framework for a visual for you.
I love that, especially that both the sort of fear center and the more calm center of control and ration and reason, they're both part of our genius.
That's exactly right. So like, are your brakes not critical for your car?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Right. If there weren't, think of, you know, I love space and, you know, the entire Apollo series, right? If you think about early warning detection mechanisms, right? The more early warning detection mechanisms you have, the safer you are. Mm. And so if our brain is got the most amazing early warning detection mechanism as part of our fear and stress response, and it causes our heartbeat to go faster, and it causes, you know, this production of these neurochemicals that can get us to run faster, lift cars, jump out of the way, you know, do things that we normally can't do in a calm and relaxed state, then that is a really good system to know how to turn on or off as needed. Now, what I always, you know, love to teach as well is how do you navigate between these two circuits, the calm and respond, you know, and the stress and react system. And think of them as light switches. So if somebody came into your room right now, if you're in a room and turned on the light switch, you'd look for where the light switch was if you wanted to, and then turn it off if you want to turn it off. Mm-hmm. Well, let's understand that we're dealing with the most complex biocomputer in the known universe. And every one of you that's listening, you already own it. Mm. Now let's work on a little bit of the user's manual so you have some of the fundamentals in place. So let's say you're stressed. Let's say you're worried. Let's say you're on the verge of panic. What does that really mean, right? The emotion of anxiety, the emotion we call stress, the emotion that we call panic is nothing more than a runaway train in our brain around negativity. What if negative? Mm. What if, you know, I hurt myself? What if I lose? What if I die? What if negative, negative, negative? That's a self-fulfilling doom loop if we keep thinking about it and feeling it and not interrupting that pattern. So what most people do is they feel, then they think, then they think about what they feel, then they feel what they think about, and they keep perpetuating the constant release of these neurochemicals that takes away blood flow from the genius part of the brain. But what if at any moment, whether when you're stressed or because you just decided to do this every hour, which I recommend, you stopped. You had a little bell on your phone or you had a little, you know, ding on your computer that reminded you it's, you know, 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock and so forth. And you just stopped and you just took six deep breaths, slowly, slowly, slowly in through your nose. And as you exhaled through your mouth, imagine that there's a straw in your mouth and you have to get all the airflow slowly and gently out through the straw. And you pay all of your attention on getting that airflow slowly out through the straw until there's no more air in your lungs or your diaphragm. And then what if on the next inhale, you simply said this, I breathe in calmness. I breathe out stress or worry or fear or uncertainty. You could breathe in courage and breathe out stress. And I breathe in calmness and I breathe out whatever you want. Now, as simple as that sounds, a calm brain does not release adrenaline, epinephrine, or cortisol, the stress hormones. A calm brain deactivates Frankenstein because Frankenstein now feels safe because you have just overridden this automatic part of your brain called the amygdala that is just there automatically as an early warning detection mechanism. Now you override that system so you can get blood flow back to Einstein, the left prefrontal cortex, so Einstein can then go, and if you did this, by the way, six times, we can show in the fMRI brain scans, the blood flow actually coming back to the Einstein part of the brain. When Frankenstein is active, that blood flow is shifting in your brain. We can actually see it on brain scan imaging scans. And so once we have blood flow back into Einstein's brain, now let's use our higher cortical function to do what I call is inner size number two. The first inner size is called take six, calm the circuit. Take six, calm the circuits. The second inner size, which goes hand in hand with Einstein, and this is the part that actually helps you retrain your brain so you can be calm and respond on a constant basis. And this is the part that takes a little practice. If you practice the inner size called AYA, A-I-A, the first A stands for awareness. Now, the question is awareness of what? And the answer is in a calm, relaxed state now, since there isn't a real threat this second, what you can become aware of is what have my thoughts been for the last, let's say, 20 to 30 minutes? Have they been constructive or destructive? Have they been fearful ones or brave ones? Have they been ones that are going to move me towards what I want or away from what I want? Have they been positive or negative? Now, here is the most important part about doing the AYA inner size. It must be done in a pure state of awareness without, let me repeat, without judgment, blame, shame, guilt, or justification. Let me repeat, without judgment, blame, shame, guilt, or justification. So if I am aware of what my thoughts have been the last 15, 20 minutes, if I'm aware of what my emotions and feelings have been the last 20 minutes, and if I'm aware of the behaviors of what I've been doing or not doing the last 15 or 20 minutes, then I can ask myself this question, which is the I. For the next 15, 20, or 30 minutes, what's my intention? So my intention to be focused, my intention to be happy, my intention to be in a courageous state of mind. My intention is to do the project that I want to finish, to start my business, to leave my job. My intention is to do that. And then the next A in Aya, and this is all brain-based, by the way, is what's one small, easy to do action step I could take towards that intention. So now what I've done is I have interrupted a stressed, uncertain, doubtful, fearful pattern. I've now implemented a constructive, positive pattern where I'm back in control. Einstein's helping me. I've set my intention after being aware, and then I'm taking one little action step. Now, one little action step may not seem like a lot, but if you want to do a marathon a year from now, one step today is one step closer. Mm-hmm. So when we reduce it to the ridiculous, what happens is awareness starts to give us choice, and then choice is what gives us our freedom, because as we create these little micro steps towards letting go of what we don't want and starting what we do, now there is a path for us to have our health goals, relationships goals, career goals, financial goals, business goals, whatever the case might be. Now we are deliberately and consciously evolving ourselves. Now I'm starting to use my brain better, the way it was meant to be used. Instead of my brain and the habits that I've gotten myself into or that were developed in childhood, now I'm able to interrupt the ones that don't serve me, and I could deliberately start new ones that will end.
Let me ask you a quick question. I'm going to use a silly example here. Do you have a dog? Do you have any pets?
I don't, but I used to have pets my whole life.
Okay, here's why I ask. So we have a one-year-old lab. And labs are known for being a little crazy, right? And we're trying to train him. But sometimes he gets into drive. That's what we call it. He's in drive, right? Where he's just crazy. And no matter what commands he normally listens to, when he's in drive, we've lost him. Like, you know, he's not going to respond to anything we do. And when I see this in my dog, I actually kind of can recognize it better in myself. Sometimes if I'm really mad, it's almost like my dog being in drive. And I don't want to be mad, but I also don't want to do the work to not be mad. Or if I'm like really, really worried about something, I feel like I'm in drive the way my dog is in drive. I don't like feeling that way, but I also have a hard time accessing some of these tools that I love. Everything you just described, I love. And I see this too in a lot of my clients and listeners. When they need it most is when they have the hardest time getting themselves to actually do it. Even if they remember, they have a moment of like, I don't even care. I'm just too mad. It doesn't even matter. So what do you just recommend, that we just continue to try and practice, or that we practice outside of these moments of drive to make it more accessible in them? Like, what is your approach? Because I know people love hearing these kinds of tools.
Sure.
Like the take six, calm the circuit and all of that. It sounds so amazing. And then we get really freaked out and it's like we lose the ability, or we convince ourselves that we've lost the ability to practice. So for those moments when we're, I don't know, I like to think of it in like being in drive, like my poor dog that doesn't listen. What is your recommendation for those times that feel inaccessible?
Great, great, great question. So listen, in times of stress, we default to our highest level of training. So, inner sizes they're great, they're logical, they're emotional, they make sense, they're fun. You know, you could listen to them, you know, which I give people who buy my book, 9 Inner Sizes, to listen to. Why do golfers practice? Why do musicians practice? Why do Rubik's Cube experts practice? Chess experts or chess players, artists, checkers players, knitting people. Like, why do people just practice? Because when we are unconsciously or consciously incompetent at something, we either don't know that we don't know or we know that we don't know. But it's only through conscious practice that we become competent. And it's only through an enormous amount of deliberate conscious practice that we become unconsciously competent. Mm. So that is the natural way of being and behaving. So I've often said, you know, if you want to achieve a result, I ask a question of every one of my students around the world. I said, listen, are you interested in having mental and emotional control, or are you committed? Mm-hmm. And when they asked me, well, what do you mean? I said, well, listen, if you're interested, you're going to give me stories and excuses and reasons why you can't or won't. But if you're committed, you'll practice and do whatever it takes. So yeah. The time to practice is not when you need the skill.
Right.
It just, Navy SEALs would die underwater if that's when they practiced. Astronauts would die. Firefighters would die, you know, in burning buildings if that's where they went to practice. Police officers would die. So learning to control your emotions, which are triggered in your subconscious mind that cause feelings that you feel, the time to practice is not when you need the skill.
Right.
Right. So when we're looking at, you know, dogs that run away, it's not because dogs run away. It's because dogs aren't trained.
Yeah.
And they run away. Mm-hmm. Trained dogs do not run away. So never, ever, ever get mad at the effect.
Yeah.
So your question is great. And that's why, you know, I like to create simple inner size. I'll give you, you know, another inner size. Okay. I'm going to have a little bit of fun. See if it works without video. Listen, Elizabeth, I don't know what the hell you're doing on this podcast right now, but it's absolutely. I don't know what I'm going to do. So what did I just do? I just went from pretending to be angry, mm-hmm. to pretending to be mad, to pretending to be crying, all in less than 60 seconds, like a Hollywood actor or actress would learn how to shift emotional states, right? Mm-hmm. Well, anybody who's listening could do that if they practiced. And so what the third inner size, which is called Actor's Studio, it's called Flip the Switch Actor's Studio, shows us is that I am not my emotions. I have emotions. And there's certain things that trigger my emotions. And mostly what triggers our emotions is the meaning that we give things at a subconscious level, or the meanings that we have learned to give things at a subconscious level. So the very thing that may make you angry may not make me angry. Mm-hmm. The very thing that makes you cry may not make me cry. The very things that causes you to feel ashamed may not make me feel ashamed. It's all based on neural interpretation that we have learned and discovered. So can we interrupt those patterns and give things a meaning that won't cause us to be angry, or won't cause us to be fearful, or won't cause us to feel like we might be embarrassed or ashamed? You know, a lot of times when I work with people who want to learn public speaking, and they say to me, I have a fear of public speaking. I said, no, you don't. You're speaking to me publicly right now. You have a fear of being embarrassed, ashamed, ridiculed, or judged. You have a self-esteem issue, not a public speaking issue.
Yeah. Yeah, that's powerful.
Right? So when we understand, I'm going to come back to, you know, we have the most powerful biocomputer. If somebody said to you, hey, I have this extra $1 trillion computer that I'm not using right now, and it can help you solve any problem you want, help you make as much money as you want, lose the weight you want, keep it off, have a great relationship. But did you want it? Most people go, yeah, man, I want it. And well, of what use would it be to you if you didn't learn how to use it? And that's what we're dealing with right now. And the reason I wrote Inner Size, the reason I love the work that our company does is all of the new research in the last 20 years shows us unequivocally that we're not hardwired. We don't have to keep living our lives with limiting beliefs like we're not good enough and not smart enough and not worthy enough, or that we're too young or too old or too Asian or too black or too white. We don't have to live with, you know, limiting beliefs, you know, that cause us to stay in this state of scarcity or even just security when there's success and significance available to us. And all it takes is a shift in our awareness of how to use our brain better. And then, yes, contrary to popular belief, you do have to do the work. Yeah. If you want the six pack, you got to have the abs. If you want a great relationship, you got to invest in being a great partner and all the things that requires is required of being a great partner. If you want to make more money, you've got to do the things that make more money. If you want to manage your money better, you better learn some money management skills. If you want to learn how to invest and protect and use debt or get out of debt, there are skills that we already know how to do. The things that you want to do. The question is going to come right back every single time. Are you interested in the result or are you committed? And if you're committed, then let's get busy. Let's get busy giving you access to the tools or the tool to buy a computer you already have, because we already have all of the how-to. All the how-to for just about anything that anybody who is listening to this wants to achieve, unless you are trying to figure out how to colonize Mars right now. All of the stuff you want to do, all the how-to already exists. But if you have fears in your way and you don't know how to move them aside, you won't take action. If you have limiting beliefs in your way and you don't know how to release limiting beliefs, which is nothing more than a neural pattern in your brain, you will be stuck. If you have self-image issues that you really don't believe you deserve to achieve the success you want, your hidden self-image will never, ever, ever allow you to outperform it.
You know, you bring up the difference in my mind between a theory, right? Like, we can all believe what you're saying and believe in the potential in it. But at that level, it really is just, it's a powerful theory. But where it becomes personally powerful is only as a practice.
Of course.
And with anything, whether we're talking about basketball or piano, practice has to be consistent over time. And like, a lot of people don't want to hear that, but it's the difference between changing your life and staying where you're at now.
That's right. I mean, we practiced walking. We practiced talking. We practiced eating with a fork and knife and spoon. We practiced tying our shoes. We practiced putting a shirt or blouse or pants on jacket. And we practiced everything consciously where it took effort. And then with enough repetition and immersion, it became an unconscious competence. Now, here's the problem. A lot of people think that practice makes perfect, and that's so wrong. Perfect practice makes perfect. So the good news is we know what we need to do to practice perfectly. We know that it takes, and this is something that we didn't talk about before, Elizabeth, that is worthy of some discussion, and that is that it takes between 66 days and 365 days for us adults over 25 to create a new pattern that is stronger than the old patterns.
Yeah. That's a lot of variability.
Well, yeah. So, for at the beginning of 2019, I always give myself one big, you know, challenge at the beginning of each year. As the beginning of 2019, I said, you know what I'm going to do for 2019? I'm going to brush my teeth with my left hand, even though for 58 years, I've been brushing my teeth with my right hand.
Okay.
And in 2020, where we're in right now, I still am having a hard time, okay, with brushing my teeth with my left hand, even though I brush it twice a day. So right. I brush my teeth a lot of times. I do it without thought right now, but trust me, my right arm still doesn't know what to do with itself. You know, it's almost like, just like, what am I supposed to do with this hand as I'm still consciously learning how to brush my teeth with my left hand?
Yeah.
If you take your toilet paper, I'm gonna make some people cringe right now. You know how your toilet paper either has the paper coming from mm-hmm. the top down or from the bottom up?
Mm-hmm. The right way or the wrong way.
Yeah, whichever one you like. I want you to just imagine flipping that around. And for the next year, you have to use toilet paper from the opposite way that you like it. And just feel the tension that you feel just thinking mm-hmm. about that. Mm-hmm. All right, take your opposite hand that you write with and try to write with the other hand. It's just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so we love our comfort zones. And right now, your beliefs formulate your comfort zone. Your beliefs formulate the lens by which you see the world, and your brain deletes or distorts everything else that doesn't line up with your current beliefs. Your habits are automatic. They're part of your automatic self, whether they serve you or don't, whether they're empowering or not. So if you're not achieving your goal or goals, depending on which area of your life you want to focus on for this minute, it's not because you can't, it's because your habits won't allow you to.
Yeah. Yet.
Right? Yet. That's right. Currently. Yeah. And so the key is, you know, how do I interrupt my habitual thought and emotional and behavioral patterns? And I always like to suggest behaviors are ones you take and ones you don't. I believe that not taking action is a behavior.
Totally. Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
And so if you're not taking inspired action, something is holding you back. And we know it's only one of four things, which we've talked about today.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I talk a lot about is the gap that so many people create for themselves as they learn more and they don't put those things into practice. And it can create this tension because as we learn more, we increase our expectations of ourselves. We raise the bar that we have because now we know that more is possible, or we expect that we're going to do things. And if we're not really conscious about closing that gap through practice and action, learning more can actually make us feel really bad about ourselves or our progress or our hope. And one of the things that I really liked most about your book, Inner Size, and I'll link it up in the show notes, is that you give the actual practice. And I know you're saying, I listened to the book on Audible. I just love that. But you are giving away actual brain training audios for people to do this work so that it's not just on them to read another book and then figure it out for themselves. Like, you are taking people through this practice with your guidance and expertise. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, for people that are like, oh, that's, you know, brain training audios, sure. What does that look like for folks?
Yeah. Earlier you mentioned something that, you know, people can read it and, you know, they have the awareness around it. They might get excited about it, but to actually go and practice it is another story. And so instead of just giving people, here's what you should do, here's why it works, here's the different parts of your brain, and here's how you strengthen this and stop this, et cetera, I just created some brain training audios using some of the greatest evidence-based methods to help people. And I act as your mental and emotional coach. And I'm just giving people access to 9 of these audios for doing the Take 6 Calm the Circuits, for doing Inner Size, for doing an I release meditation, for doing a distraction therapy session, for doing a visualization mental contrasting session to help people see themselves. And so I act as people's mental and emotional coach in these audios. And when people buy the book for, I think it's $12 for the book on Amazon, I give them these audios worth a couple $100, which many of my clients in the past used to pay for.
Wow.
And it's just a way to get people introduced to really doing the practice. And we tell our clients, you know, just practice when you wake up, just take a few minutes and just do one inner size for 10 minutes. Do it while you're doing something else. And so, or do it while you're sitting down. So it's just a way to practice. And once you practice, And you really get the hang of how good you feel and how focused you are and how you really can have more mental and emotional control. I've got hundreds of thousands of students around the world that are intersizing every single day now, for whether it's for weight loss or making more money or building their business or releasing fear or procrastination. I've developed an entire line of intersizes and programs. And the great place to start is with some free ones with this book.
I want to circle back and wrap up kind of where we started, because as we're recording this, the world is still very much in the throes of the COVID-19 pandemic, and there's a lot of quarantine still in effect and social distancing and all of that. And it can feel threatening and like it's totally out of our control. But what you are making available to everybody is an improvement in our own emotional states, our own mental states, that the feelings like stress and fear and anxiety and worry are not just happening to us. They are something that we can really influence and improve with practice. And you define that out. It's step by step. You make it so clear. And I really enjoyed, I was just looking at my Audible library. It was about a year ago that I listened to the book on Audible. And I'm so excited that, you know, now I'm able to chat with you about it and introduce it to my listeners. But any final thoughts that you would like to leave with folks who might be feeling really powerless in this situation that is unprecedented? I mean, I have looked back, you know, if somebody had said to me 2 months ago what would be happening right now in my personal life, and then the combination of that with what's happening in the world, I would have told them that they were like totally out of their mind, right? That stores would be closed and that, you know, people would be out of work in record numbers. Like, we just did not see this coming. So I would just love to give you a second to share for the people listening who might be feeling a twinge of hope in understanding that this kind of mental and emotional exercise that's defined and clear is available to them. What would you leave them with?
One of the things I've been teaching all of my students and private clients and et cetera is based on something that I popped into my head a few years or 2 years ago. I was in the Galapagos Island retracing Darwin's trail. We were on a catamaran. I was reading his book. And one of the things that became really evident, and there were posters and hats all around there, was that one of the greatest skills that we could have as a human being, there's two of them, resiliency, right? But also being an adaptationist. Mm. So what is an adaptationist? And can we become a deliberate adaptationist? Now, I'm very, very, you know, familiar with what I've been quarantined, self-quarantined for 6 weeks. I live with my beautiful wife and my mother-in-law, who's 80 years old, and she's in great shape. And the reason I'm home most of the time, other than going for, you know, walks, is just to make sure she doesn't get sick. And my two sons are in their mid-20s, are also quarantined at their mom's house down the street. But the question is around, what is an adaptationist, right? What does she do? And an adaptationist makes a decision to be flexible like bamboo, strong and flexible. And so right now, none of us can control this virus per se, right? Mm-hmm. None of us can predict, you know, if or when we get it, you know, how it's going to impact us. You know, we have healthy people that respond terribly to it, and some people that are ill that respond great to it. And so we don't know. So there's a real threat. But what we do know is we can take some measures to give us as much control as we could possibly have, right? So we can self-quarantine. We can wash our hands. We can wear masks. We can do a lot of things that give us some sense of control. And why not? Let's start with that.
Yeah.
There's the truth of life is there's always some unpredictability, right? There's always unpredictability. And the more that we get comfortable with you know, a level of unpredictability, especially around this time, the more we can be in a sense or feel more in control. And so whenever we're focused on what can I do, instead of focusing on what I cannot do, whenever we're focused on what can I do to be healthy, what can I do to build my immune system, what can I do to protect myself and my family, what can I do? And we can get back to the point of some level of certainty that, okay, I feel safer now, and we get it to the best of our abilities, then we're going to release that neural tension and that Frankenstein brain going, but what if? Mm-hmm. If we're going to do the what if negative, let's also get good at going, but what if positive? What if I don't get it? What if I make it through this? What if instead of failing, I succeed? What if instead of, you know, going 5 years backwards because of this, I could figure out a way to move 5 years forward? Mm-hmm. So we have both the brake and the gas that we could be using. And the key is to use the brake when we need it and to focus on using the gas gently to reduce the risk and to make us feel safe and comfortable. And listen, this is my, I guess, fifth type, you know, of recession, downturn, where, you know, there's all hell's broken loose in one sense or another. And this too shall pass. The question is, while we're in it, why not be at choice of how you navigate through it and rise up to being bigger than the problem? A lot of times when people feel this overwhelm and stress, they're allowing the problem, the thing, to be bigger than them. Mm-hmm. And I just want to remind people of something. Somehow, if we go back almost 14 billion years, and this thing called a Big Bang happened, or somehow, you know, the beginning of time began, and somehow, you know, 2.5 million years, when Homo erectus started working or walking on Earth after billions of years of evolution, and these atoms and cells and molecules and electrons and protons and muons in our bodies coalesced and formulated a sentient being called a human with 9 systems and 100 trillion cells and 100 billion brain cells that all interact and interplay in actual perfect order and harmony. That's you. Mm-hmm. That genius is you. 108 billion humans have walked on planet Earth since the beginning of time. And you are here right now with the genetic history of the species for survival, for safety, for intelligence, for ingenuity, for resiliency, for adaptability. You are built for this. And you can't forget that. You can't allow this very significant, traumatic, whatever you want to call it, thing, occurrence in our history be bigger than you.
That is encouraging and just so necessary to hear in times when there's just a lot of doom and gloom out there. John, thank you so much. Guys, the book is called Inner Size, The Proven Science to Unleash Your Brain's Hidden Power. This is the time for it. It is something that we can take control of and really use these challenging times to our advantage. Thank you so much, John. I'm really grateful for you being here.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. It's so much fun for me to do interviews with people who've actually read the book or listened to it.
Yeah.
You know, I get interviewed quite a bit, and it brings a joy to my heart to be able to talk to somebody who gets it. And so thank you so much for the work that you do as well. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thanks so much for listening to the Primal Potential Podcast, where our goal is not to help you learn. Our goal is to help you change. This is a year of action. Take something you learned from this episode and put it into action in your life today. To learn more about working more closely with me and the Primal Potential team, please visit primalpotential.com/transform.